Walking by Faith, an exposition of Genesis chapter 12, verses 1 through 4. This message by Pastor Rod Harris was delivered at Trinity Baptist Church on Wednesday evening, August the 22nd, 2012.
Well, it happened, but you still can't believe it. You went to work. It was a day just like any other day. But they called you into the office and said, well, we just wanted you to know today's your last day. The company's being shut down. You didn't have a clue. Looking back, you can see there were some signs. There were some things that maybe could have clued you in a little bit, but no official word. If you had known, maybe you could have prepared. Maybe you could have set some money back. But as it is, you're just slapped with this. And so you start to worry and you start to think, what am I going to do? Because I still have a mortgage and I still have insurance needs and I still have bills to pay and I still need to provide food for my family. And I don't know what I'm going to do. It's overwhelming. I'm even wondering if I could survive. Maybe it's not that scenario, but it's something similar to it. It's something major. You've gone through some major crisis that's touched every part of your life. It's shaken you. It's one of those kind of experiences that shakes everything in your life. Nothing is unaffected by it. And just as you're staggering under the weight of all that, some good, gracious, well-meaning friend comes to your aid. They come to console you. And they say something like this: I know it's tough, but this is when you need to hang in there. This is when you just need to have faith and believe. Now, they meant well. And honestly, they're right. What they said is true, and it is the right thing, but you still want to slap them. You're still upset. I mean, it seems so uncaring to just come out and say it in that way. As the people of God, we are unquestionably called to live or walk by faith. I mean, that's clear. Old Testament, New Testament. We are called to live by faith. It's easy to say that, provided everything in our world is relatively normal. It's pretty easy when the job is secure and the money's in the bank and the kids are well-behaved and everyone's in relatively good health. It's pretty easy to say, well, I just live by faith. I just trust the Lord. The problem is when all hell breaks loose. The problem is when your life is shaken. And that seems to happen on a somewhat regular basis in this fallen world. When we are shaken and someone tells us to have faith, it just rings kind of hollow. Yeah, we know it's true, and we know it's what we ought to do, but sometimes it just doesn't seem that helpful. Add to that that various Bible teachers encourage us to exercise our faith. If you can just see it, you can make it happen. If you just speak faith-filled words, then you can have whatever you say. Sounds good. But how does it work when you've had the wind knocked out of you? How does exercising your faith and speaking faith-filled words work when you're laying flat on your back and you can't get the courage to do anything? When you just don't feel like saying anything, you don't feel like standing up, you don't feel like doing what you know you ought to do, how does it work then? What about this business of walking by faith? To hear most modern-day teaching on the subject, it seems there's very little difference between visualization and biblical faith. It seems like positive thinking and just screwing up your own courage and make grin and bear it and do what needs to be done. But what does it mean biblically to walk by faith? In order to look at that today, we want to look at the life of Abraham because he serves as a model of living or walking by faith. Genesis chapter 12, again, we're going to look at verse 1 down through verse 4. An entire movement has grown up around this concept of living by faith. Faith teachers abound, especially in this town and associated with ministries in this town. It dominates the airwaves. It's prevalent in the Christian bookstores. Problem is, their message is wrong. and the emphasis is misguided. While faith teachers say that it is God doing the work, the emphasis seems to be on you and what you're doing and your ability to believe and your ability to remain firm. If you just have enough faith, then God will do it. If you can just believe, then you can release the power of God. I don't believe that's a biblical message. That's a man-centered, man-oriented message. Faith is taught as an extraordinary act, and yet one that you're capable of, and that seems to be a contradiction to me. Faith is thought of in terms of a power that can be developed. I'm convinced that rather than a power to be exercised, faith in the biblical context is confidence and trust in God. Confidence and trust in God. The biblical emphasis is not on faith, but on the object of our faith. It's not about you believing strong enough. It's not about you having the courage to believe. It's about the one whom you believe. It's about where you're putting your trust, where you're putting your confidence. And in that sense, faith is both the most natural and the most unnatural thing you'll ever do. Now, I say exercising faith is the most natural thing because if you think about it, on one level, we exercise faith every day. I mean, if you and I have a conversation and we're talking about the week that we have in front of us and what our schedules look like, and we say, hey, I think it would work out. Would you like to go to lunch tomorrow? And so we set a time for meeting on Thursday for lunch. And we look at our schedule and say, okay, how about 11 o'clock and we'll meet at Cracker Barrel? And so, yeah, okay, write it down, put it in the schedule, 11 o'clock, Cracker Barrel. A little bit before 11, I'm going to show up at Cracker Barrel expecting you to show up. I exercise faith that you're actually going to be there, that you're going to meet me for lunch. That's a sense in which we do exercise faith on a daily basis. Or, you ever flown in a plane? Then you're exercising faith. You're putting confidence and trust in a whole lot of people. You're putting confidence and trust in the one who's flying the plane. You're putting confidence and trust in the ones who keep the maintenance up on that plane. You're exercising faith in a whole lot of folks anytime you get on an airplane. Have you ever taken an umbrella when you left because the weatherman said it looks like rain? Boy, now you're really exercising faith. Because sometimes weathermen have been known to be wrong. But we hear and put some confidence and trust in that, and we act upon it. That's, in a sense, exercising faith. So that's what I mean when I say, in one sense, it's the most natural thing we'll do. But at the same time, it's the most unnatural thing, especially when we talk about biblical faith, because we're talking about trusting one who is not like us. We're talking about trusting one whose nature and ways are beyond our comprehension. As a result, sometimes what God commands us to do seems contrary to our reason. His ways are not our ways, and His thoughts are not our thoughts. And sometimes we're called to do something that in our own thinking doesn't make any sense at all. Why would I do that? That's when faith comes in. And what is faith? It is my acting upon my confidence or my trust in. So, as we look at Genesis 12, starting at verse 1, keep that understanding of faith in mind. Because I think as we look at these verses, we discover that the life of faith exhibits absolute trust and confidence in the person and the Word of God. To live by faith, to walk by faith, is to put confidence and trust in God's person and His Word. Two things I want to point out in this text. First of all, the life of faith defies its own reasoning and trusts God above its own understanding. The Lord said to Abram, go out from your land, your relatives, and your father's house to the land that I will show you. I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you, and I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse those who treat you with contempt. And all the peoples of the earth will be blessed through you. So Abram went, as the Lord told him, and Lot went with him. Abram was 75 years old when he left Haran. So here we have God coming, God speaking, and Abram obeying. We said last time when we began our look at Abram that there was nothing about him to commend him to God. There was nothing about his life or his character that set him apart in the sense that he was so holy or he was so extraordinary or he was so godly beyond all his contemporaries that God said, that's the one I'm going to use to build a great nation. That's the one I'm going to use. He was from a family of idol worshipers. He came from a region that was known for their worship and their service to pagan gods. And God looked down and saw this very unimpressive man in the midst of absolute pagan idolatry, and I think God smiled and said, I'm going to use that one to make a name for myself and to call out a people that will be a glory to my name. And so he came and he called. And look at what he calls him to do. Leave your country, leave your people, leave your father's household and go to a land that I will show you and I will make you a great nation. Now I want to ask you, put yourself in Abram's sandals. Does that make sense to you? This God that you don't know comes to you and says, leave everything you know and everyone you know, and I'm going to do something really great. It's going to be wonderful. So pack up, head to the desert, and just keep going. When you get there, I'll tell you you're there. And I'm going to make you a great nation. Does that make sense? If you were Abram, what would have been your response? Yeah. I would have really struggled. Give me a little more detail. Can you at least tell me where we're going? Can you at least tell me, is there a McDonald's nearby? Can you give me some indication? No. I called you. Now you go. When you get there, I'll let you know you're there. That would be a very difficult thing for most of us to do. In fact, as I thought about it, if the goal was to make him a great nation, why not leave him where he is? Why not start with where he is? He already has influence. He already has some standing in the community. Wouldn't it make more sense to build on the basis of what's already in place rather than to start from nothing? Go and I will make you great. He's 75. His wife is 65 and barren. Go, and I'm going to make you a great nation. Nothing about it made sense. Nothing about it seemed logical. Leave everything and go out in the desert, and I will make you a great nation. And I would say, from what? How are you going to do that? Can you at least explain some of the details? Can you give me some insight as to how this is going to work? No detail is given, but we read in verse 4, so Abram went, as the Lord told him. He believed God in spite of all the evidence to the contrary. That is what faith is about. It's the substance of things hoped for. It's the evidence of things that we can't see. He put his confidence in this God who called him. And that becomes the hallmark of his life. He wasn't perfect, and he made some blunders along the way, and we'll look at those in the weeks to come. He did some really dumb things. But the most consistent thing about his life is his willingness to believe and trust God in spite of how unreasonable things seemed. Hebrews 11 and verse 8 says, by faith Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to a place that he was to receive as an inheritance. And he went out not knowing where he was going. To walk by faith is to walk in obedience to the call of God. To step out in obedience to the will of God. To trust Him. To rely on Him. It's not irrational. See, there are those who say, well, see, faith is irrational. Faith is a blind leap. You ever heard that expression? To act in faith is just to blindly trust. I don't think that's it at all. Faith is to trust in the person of God and His Word. And Abram's faith increased as he found God faithful. And Abram didn't get stronger in his faith. He just had more and more confidence in the God he continued to trust. And that's really the issue. Because see, we have this tendency to think, well, if I'm growing in my faith, that means I'm just stronger and stronger and I have fewer and fewer doubts. I don't think that's true. What happens, what changes, is that I am able to overcome my doubts because God has consistently been faithful. And so I trust Him. I'm not trusting me. I'm not trusting my ability to believe. I'm not trusting my ability to obey. I'm trusting Him. He's proven Himself trustworthy. He's proven Himself to be worthy of my confidence. It's not irrational to obey the Word of God. In fact, I'd go so far as to say the most rational thing you will ever do is trust the Word of the true and the living God. That's the most rational thing you could ever do. What's irrational is to say He doesn't know what He's talking about. What's irrational is for me, as a fallen child of Adam, to think I know better than He knows. That I understand my circumstance better than He does. That's irrational. It's rational to say the God who spoke the universe into being and the God who's proven His love and the God who's shown Himself faithful is worthy, and if He tells me to do it, I need to do it. That's to exercise faith. Faith is not a means of my releasing the power of God. It is my obedience in response to the Word of God. How do I do that when things are difficult? How do I rise above the struggle? That brings us to the second thing. The life of faith clings tenaciously to the sovereign promise of God. How do I rise above my doubt and my fear and my frustration? I wish I could say, well, I've been a Christian a number of years now. I've been pastoring for a long time, and boy, I have grown so much, and I don't struggle like I used to struggle. I struggle as much as I ever have. I'm better at overcoming my struggle because I've seen God work. And I've experienced His touch, and I've seen with my own eyes, which gives me greater confidence in who He is. But I have the same doubts and fears. You don't overcome that as long as we live in this world. I still get a lump in my stomach when I get a call and someone's in a crisis. I don't care how long you've walked into crisis and dealt with it. I still go because I am fully aware of my inadequacy. I'm fully aware that I often say the wrong thing and that I'm not smart enough to handle whatever it is I'm about to walk into. But faith comes in when you say, God called me to go there, so I'm going in confidence of Him, not me. That He will give me words to speak. That He will give me confidence. That He will use me as an instrument. Because my faith isn't in me. It isn't in my growth. It isn't in my ability. My confidence, my hope, my trust is in the person and the Word of God. Genesis 12 through 25 tell the story of Abram, who then becomes Abraham. But in a great sense, and the greatest sense, we need to read those chapters not as the story of Abraham, but of the story of Abraham's God. Because that really is what the story is about. It's about what God did in Abraham's life and through Abraham. Look at verses 2 and 3. I will make you a great nation. I will bless you. I will make your name great. You will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse those who treat you with contempt. And all the peoples of the earth will be blessed through you. God promises Abram seven things. And would you note, they're unconditional promises. This is not a case where God said, Abram, I'm going to make you a deal. If you will be consistent in following me, I'm going to do these things. He didn't even say, Abram, if you will believe, I will do these things. He simply said, Abram, here's what I'm going to do. Period. Number one, I'm going to show you a land. Two, I'm going to make you a great nation. Three, I'm going to bless you. Four, I will make your name great, and so you will be a blessing. Five, I will bless those who bless you. And six, I will curse those who curse you or treat you with contempt. And seven, I will bless the peoples of the earth through you or through your seed. That's what God promised. And Abram believed. Abram trusted. The life of faith often has only the promise of God to stand on. But the promise of God is enough. That's the point. Believe. Cling tenaciously to that promise. Now, I think if you listen carefully, you can hear Abram protest. Because, see, I don't think when Abraham believed God, I don't think he did so in kind of a robot fashion. I don't think it's a matter that, well, he obeyed and he never questioned it. He never doubted. I think he struggled to believe. But he kept saying he promised, he promised, he promised. Okay, Lord, I'm going. And I think as he's packing up, he's saying, boy, this is probably the dumbest thing I've ever done in my life. But Lord, I believe because you said. And as he's going, he's saying, okay, this everything seems to be going smoothly. And the first bump in the road, he said, oh, I see, I probably didn't hear him. That's probably not what he said. He kept coming back. I believe. I believe. In fact, if we could hear him, I think you could hear him say, but Lord, suppose I misunderstand your leading and I get out of your will. And the Lord would answer, I'll bless you and make you a great nation. But suppose my descendants turn again to idolatry. What if my descendants refuse to believe? What if they turn back? And God would respond, I will bless you and make you a great nation. I think Abram could have even said, but what if we crucify your son? He'll say, I'll bless you and make you a great nation. Because Abram, it's not about your believing. It's about my promise. And I will do what I said I will do. God's unconditional promise didn't depend on Abram's ability to see how it was going to turn out. It did not depend on his being able to understand how it would be fulfilled or whether he or his descendants would be able to live up to the promise. The blessing of God comes from God and not from the nation. Not from them believing. Not from them trusting. By the way, why was this nation from Abram so great? make you a great nation. Was it because they were large? They were never large as nations go. It's not their size. Was it because of the great philosophical system that they developed? No. Was it their spiritual greatness? Was it their great insights spiritually? They were great because God loved them. Because God chose them. The life of faith stands firmly on the promise of God. Now, that doesn't mean that I can take the book and find a verse and claim it and God is obligated. What it means is when God speaks to me a word that applies to me, I can stand firm on that word and that promise. Because again, it's not my believing. It's not my taking hold of something and saying, looky, Lord, I'm really sincere about believing this and you're obligated now. He's obligated to do what he said he would do. Because he has obligated by his word. It is my trust in him. It is my confidence in his word. If I come to a biblical text and there is biblical evidence that that promise pertains to me as a child of God, you bet I can stand on it and stand firm. As a child of God, we're called to walk by faith. The life of faith exhibits absolute confidence in the person and the word of God, defying its own reason and trusting God above its own understanding, and tenaciously clinging to the sovereign promise of God. We are called to live by faith. And that's what it means to live by faith.
You've been listening to a Plowman podcast. Find us on the web at theplowman.org. The Plowman features the preaching ministry of Rod Harris, pastor of Trinity Baptist Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma, located at the corner of 41st and Union. To learn more about the ministries at Trinity Baptist Church, visit us on the web at www.tbctulsa.org.